top of the table, that's exciting. Bottom of the table, that's exciting. Like, that's the sort of football that you want to be in. These are the pressure games that in 15, 20 years' time I will look back on and I will remember. These are the important matches for me, not the middle of the table teams.
Subscribe to the Koi Gig podcast stream on the OTB Sports app now.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, main sponsor of the Irish rugby team. We all belong to the team of us.
Okay, so we're talking Six Nations, two rounds done already, three to go of the weekend just gone. Saturday was very much the day. Ireland beaten by 6 points in Paris. Wales inevitably, in many ways, will themselves over the line against the Scots. Sunday, less compelling, I think we can say. Italy have lost game number 34 in a row in this competition. Marcus Smith was man of the match for England. Very happy to say Keith Wood is with us. Evening, Keith.
Hey, good evening, Joe. How are you?
Very well. Liam Toned as well. Hey, Liam.
Good as gold. Thanks, Joe.
So France 30, Ireland 24. A fair proportion of the analysis is boiled down to one moment. So let's deal with that moment and then we can move on to bigger picture stuff. So 72nd minute, Keith, you've been there and you've done it. Are you kicking for post or are you kicking the corner?
I've done it and I've done both of them, actually, and I've got them right and wrong on many occasions, even though it's a long time in the past. I thought it was a kick to the corner. I thought it's hard trying to understand when you're not in the stadium or on the field, but from the vantage point of the television, it looked like France were struggling and the last thing that they wanted was to be kicked into the corner. And so I felt anything that Ireland would be doing, even in the next 8 minutes after, was to try and get into a position to kick into the corner. So I think it was, and I'm not saying that retrospectively, it's what I thought immediately at the time. But I'm interested in some of the discussions around it. And like the feeling for the guys is, yeah, you can pop that over and we can get back down there again. But another penalty wouldn't have done it either. So I feel the try and the potential try that you'd get from a line out was the option to take. But I tried to have a look at this slightly differently, if I can. It'd be interesting when Liam comes in as to what he thinks on it as well. And I think an awful lot of people, because they haven't experienced it, don't quite understand the fatigue, the level of pressure under decision-making in that last few minutes. And I started looking at the players that were left on the field, and there was very few players that have that experience of making that decision. So I would say, and it'll be something we'll come back to in this conversation, I will say that that may be one of the biggest things to be learned from this, from that player, from James Ryan, for other players, that decision-making is experience-based, you know, and I don't think he has that experience. So he made the call, he stood behind the call, the coach stood behind the call, which you would expect him to do. Whether we would have scored from that or not was in no way certain. So it's not the winning and the losing of the game, actually. But it's just something that has to be learned afterwards. I thought it was the most magnificent game of rugby. I thought it was fantastic. And I'd like if we'd won, and I'd be happier if we'd won. And yet I can't but step away from thinking that we've learned a huge amount about this group of players and this team. And I'm really impressed by that.
There was some experience. Conor Murray was there. Ian Henderson was there. Peter Amani. I think he was off at that stage. But there was some experience there. Here's a question, because it's always interesting to tease out just traditions and received wisdom. So the received wisdom, Liam, is, well, the players on the pitch, they have a feel for the game. Maybe we should challenge that a bit. Why, at this stage in rugby, and all the data that may or may not be available in the stands, I don't know, but certainly the experience in the stands, why at this stage in rugby is there not a policy of look towards the coaching box and say, you're the coach, you decide, thumbs up, thumbs down, give us the message and we'll do what you think. You're the one who's taken a bigger, dispassionate view of the game. Why is that not the practice a bit more in rugby?
Well, if you paid close attention to the NFL playoffs in the last few weeks, you'll see the amount of geniuses on the sideline with all the statistical analysis, and they still can't get it absolutely right. There's always going to be controversy.
Say you don't agree with the coaches. What about the decision on the pitch then? Because it's a very interesting one, and like I've heard contrasting opinions. So specifically to that one, Liam.
I suppose my thoughts oftentimes is you need to reward the pack. And at times in Paris, I felt that as brilliant and all as the halfbacks were playing, at times they didn't reward the pack sometimes. And getting that 3 points can be a huge reward. You're kind of saying, guys, you've done the work here. I'll take the 3 points and we rebuild again. I think there can be a huge positive impact on the emotional integrity of the team at that point in time, particularly when you take into account fatigue. But equally, if they decide to go to touch, then they have to execute that. That's not an easy thing to do in Paris against that. So you won't, like, if you had the decision 10 times over, you'll probably come up 50-50 either way. It is not an exact science.
No, I appreciate that. I wonder as well, Keith, you think 4 or 5 minutes before the decision had to be made, Tadhg Birne had that extraordinary 50-22 and Ireland lost the line out. And yeah, suddenly you've got a second row there making the call. It must be on his mind. It's been a tricky day. It's been a tricky evening at the line out, not least just 4 minutes previously.
Yeah, and that's why I said I don't think it goes down to this. I think that goes down to, I think a lot of fans and sometimes the media brings it down to the game being about 1 point. I don't believe it. Like, it wasn't a mistake. It wasn't a foot in touch or a penalty given away or something like that. It was a decision that was made because the view would be that they could go and get another one. The reason I would have said you'd kick in the corner is because you needed a converted try to win, or two scores to win anyway. And you were in a position to get one, and then maybe getting a penalty from the halfway line is an easier one afterwards. Now, that's, I can think that way, partly because I wasn't playing on Saturday, partly because I've been in those situations before, and that's the experience that I would have. And when we're talking about the experience, if you mentioned Conor Murray or you mentioned Ian Henderson being on the field, well, then they needed to put their hand up and say it. But you could hear over the referees, Mike, there was a lot of calls for points, points, points. So I don't know. But what I'm trying to say is, the decision is made and you deal with it then afterwards. And I thought we, in the last 5, 6, 7 minutes, because we've been so shell-shocked at the start of the game, I thought a lot of players were flat out on their feet mentally as well as physically.
Yeah.
And I thought some of the decisions there are, but like, I'm trying to say this has been a positive, and I'm not trying to do it for a glorious loss or what, you know, those sort of the conversations that people would have had in the past. I just thought this was a great opportunity. I've read some of the press that's talked about it and people saying, well, obviously Ireland now need to recruit bigger players. They really don't need to recruit bigger players because they are within a kick or two away from beating a very, very large team. The standard and the manner in which they played was just fantastic and appropriate for Irish-sized people, if you want to use that for a phrase. And I think that what those players will learn from that is if they could have kept the pace a little, kicked a little bit less maybe in the first half, kept the pace at that huge pace that was there. Like if the game went on for another 5 minutes, France were beaten. They were absolutely wrecked from it. And they had played a phenomenal game of rugby. So for me, it's one of the best games of rugby I've seen for 10 or 15 years with an Irish team involved in it, and we lost. And it's for all those different things that those players are going to learn. Looking at Andrew Porter in the front row playing on the loose head, didn't have as much of an impact as we're used to seeing him have. But that was about the most aggressive and difficult scrummaging day he's ever going to have. And he's not experienced at playing on the loose head. And the fact of having gone through that is going to mean he's going to be an awful lot better the next time he comes up against someone of the size of Antonio. So, I mean, you're looking at the things that these guys will learn from that loss. A year and a half out from a World Cup. And I don't want to look for a loss. I'm never looking for that at all. But we know nothing can be papered over because it's a loss. And all those players will have seen, wow, if we can get that close doing this, if we just tidied up a little bit more, if we understood the discipline that we required at ruck time because of, like, the players would not have seen France at home. A lot of those players, France at home, with that level of confidence and still be in the game, the fact that they were in the game at all at halftime is unbelievable, because France were magnificent.
Okay. Liam, come in and all that then. The French power, because we like most people, I think, it was well marked in advance. You mentioned it when we were on discussing the game. It was, in that first 40 minutes in particular, awesome. It looked like this was almost mission impossible for Ireland.
Yeah, we talked, didn't we, last week about the, I suppose, the more passive Wales that we can't benchmark our performance, really. The precision that we're trying to execute is going to come under an onslaught of grit. Like, we predicted that, but so would the players. They would have recognised all that, you know. It was like the chopping down. You looked at, like, Tadhg Ferguson once ran into a brick wall and kind of just bounced backwards. And you don't see our big guys that, like, this was a war of attrition on the gain line, and there was inches gained either side, and invariably, if you look at the stats, it pretty much evened itself out. But almost never did the Irish player get across in heavy traffic, get across, and then the likes of Williamson, these second rows, they just come in and they just wallop everything out of the way. It's ferocious what they did. And I think World Rugby then has to look at something. I don't know how Keith might think of this, but there's a 6-2 split. So France are throwing everything, like South Africa have been doing, into this big, powerful, awesome game. And just when you get a bit of, and to kind of feed off what Keith was saying, just when you get the fatigue element kicking in, they bring in six forwards. That's practically a new pack. Mm. So you have to start again, you know. So like on top of the lessons learned, and it was one of the best games I've ever been at. It was phenomenal. But on top of that now, I suppose the key is the lessons that the Irish players have learned and the Irish management have learned. Another big question is, what do you do when you play against a brutal, physical, fast, like, you know, the French forwards are fast. When they introduce six fresh guys, how do you change your game plan? Because you have to start and fatigue them all over again. And it's really, really difficult tactical strategy to understand how you can fatigue them enough to start scoring again. Remember, Ireland scored 3-2, you know, that's phenomenal, France. You know, it's a huge, I suppose that's the big question. The power bit, the precision bit, and fatigue. And somewhere in the middle of that, the Irish game has to figure out how to fatigue the big, powerful players and then maximise it. And that's where those small little margin decisions. Should Carberry kick for the corner and roar at his pack, or should he keep it alive? And they're the little nuances I think Ireland have to figure out over the coming months.
Keith, in some ways, can't make sense of the game in that. Like, Mac Hansen's try was a complete freak. Now, it was a touch of genius from Mac Hansen, by the way, but we'll never see it again. So mentally, I'm kind of writing that off a touch. And then that weird 5-6 minutes where they go from 15 points down to a point down. I mean, it's great Irish play in both instances, those two tries. But again, there's something freakish going on there. And admittedly, there is a period later on where Ireland have a good spell. But in the main, the overall sense watching was France are going to win this game and Ireland are doing remarkably well to hang on here at all. I don't know if, like, is that a fair reflection? It feels like the scoreboard at times had a very nice sheen to it from an Irish point of view, and that's not to mention the French genius out there, you know, behind these man mountains up front. They only really caught fire for that opening try. I mean, there's a sense, I don't know, that France actually will think we could have won very comfortably that game.
I actually don't think they could have won the game comfortably. I thought there was a risk of them scoring again, but I didn't feel as if there was a risk of us dropping our heads. I thought, like, it's funny, I looked at Caelan Doris and I looked at it again afterwards, and I thought he was having a poor game and he was getting bullied and he was getting knocked over, and it happened a lot. He made 18 tackles. Now, some of those were soaking tackles. And the reason when I said I thought he had a poor game was that was the first feeling I had. But when I look back at it, he never took a backward step. He got knocked backwards, but he fronted up every single time. And you didn't see a head drop in the game. That's an interesting place to be, because France were on fire. Mm. And so, look, I've said this now, and it's 20 years ago when we did it, but I've played those games. Actually, 20 years ago to the day, we went 5 points up or 5-3 up, and we lost 44-5. And played in the World Cup in 2003, and they got going and they kind of relaxed at the end of it. They didn't relax in this game. They were trying to put down a marker of how they could punish a really good team, right? And that's what they tried to do. And they were surprised at halftime. I've listened to the comments afterwards that the Irish players were saying they felt they were fully in it. It didn't look like it. No. And the Hansen score was a freak score. So Ireland hadn't had a chance to have a purple patch. But when they did get it, which I have to say, I thought they would get it. I thought it might last a while and it might lead to a try or something. You just don't know. Mm. But that purple patch extended. And the longer it extended, you could see the disbelief in some of the French players and some of the young players who hadn't come across this type of attitude because they were that good in the first half.
Yeah, okay,
And I would have said that the forwards were saying, really, we should have killed off the Irish team at this stage and with the amount of energy they'd used in doing it. And yet the Irish guys were still there, beaten back but unbowed. So I just go back to what do we learn from it? Mm. If we go down to the idea is that we have to match, there's only two teams in the world, really. England a little bit, but not at the moment. So you're talking South Africa and France, who are that powerful oriented, and the blend of the pace and that, a little bit of Argentina, but they're not there that either yet. So there's two teams. Do we copy and emulate those teams? And I've heard some people say we really need to get bigger. We're not going to get any bigger. We just need to get smarter with it. How can we make that ball very fast? I thought Sean Edwards, it was all over his the defensive setup that they picked the times that they wanted to counter ruck. They tried to slow down every ball just within the laws, right? They tried to slow everyone down, but every now and then they had a cut at an Irish ruck and it nearly went and became a penalty every time.
Yeah.
And we haven't seen that. So this is the thing we're learning now. And we now have to figure out a way around it. So it's back over to the coaching team again to be able to think their way through this one.
Okay, yeah. Well, you summed that up brilliantly then. And Liam, do you share Keith's sense in the stadium when you were watching it that this was almost Ivan Drago, the French, looking over at Rocky getting up off the canvas again somewhere midway through that second half saying, holy hell. And that, you know, the ebb turning then, was that your feeling in the ground?
Well, I think it was a huge mark of respect to the Irish team that the crowd were very nervous before the game. There was no confidence or cockiness about how they're approaching it. Like the atmosphere on the ground was so different from the Wales-Ireland game the previous week, because deep down we knew Wales are not in a good place, and deep down we know that Ireland are in a good place, and this wasn't going to be a massive contest. Every minute that, even with that early score, like the reaction of the French around me when that score went in was like shock and delight. And as soon as Mac Hansen scored again, wow, they were back in the pressure cooker. So I think France has a huge acknowledgement of where Irish rugby is, took every moment they could to try and win that game. And there's enormous credit for what I saw them doing. It was very interesting, like Fiku swapping, the 12 and 13 swapping around. They had a game plan beyond just fluky stuff. So the process of what Keith was talking about there, we've seen that happening in the last number of games, the Sean Edwards. We see them poaching in it. We see them doing a double tackle. We see the second tackler coming in on the poach. This is a discipline that they're bringing into the game that they didn't have. And we discussed that last week. Mm. There's other disciplines of how they set up. As I said, 12 and 13 swap. Fiku defensively came in and made some massive hits, like huge thuddering hits. And they battled as best they could in the knowledge that Ireland were arguably in the top, you know, they are the best team in the Six Nations, and France wanted to prove otherwise. The fact that Ireland actually stayed in the game, figured out the scrum, figured out the line-out at times, and then tried to get back into the game was an immense performance, absolutely and utterly immense performance. And losing their hooker so early on, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There was an awful lot of challenges, losing Sexton early on. Like Carberry would be 100 times the player as a result of Saturday than he ever would have been if he got 10 minutes at the end of the game.
Yeah. And how did he do for you?
I thought he was super. Like, as I'm sitting now, I was in the corner. I was watching diagonally. So where the Irish dancers at halftime, they were the other end. I was in the corner. And it was a great... So France were attacking into my corner, say, in the second half. So a number of times, imagined if Ronan O'Gara was on that ball at that moment of time, what would he have done? And there were opportunities to reward his pack. And that was the way I was thinking, because it must have been the most fatiguing fixture of this Irish. And these guys are Test Lions and European Cup winners. So it's getting that balance. And that's why I suppose my takeaway is all the lessons learned. But how does an Irish team, I totally agree with the, it's irrelevant to try and find bigger players. It is utilising our skill set, that the Irish players have displayed a skill set in the last, particularly back to Japan in the autumn, an unbelievable skill set. So taking that skill set, bringing it to a higher pace to allow it to fatigue the opposition that bit earlier, and then to try and maximise the fatigue elements. That's the piece of the jigsaw that the Irish would have to look at. And from Carberry's point of view, how does he find that balance between the intricate plays, keeping the pace on, and rewarding his pack? Because his pack at times needed a reward. And reward, what I'm saying is points or a rest or a good diagonal kick to start to rebuild again.
Mm. Keith, on your point about moving a team like the French around a touch more, curious for your thoughts on why we saw Ireland not be quite as silky smooth in possession as, say, they were against Wales, certain set plays not quite working, or even a few knock-ons that we weren't quite seeing. I mean, I presume you're going to tell me French pressure or the French in their heads, but there were just a couple of errors that, you know, you'd say, I don't know, is it anxiety perhaps? Shane Horgan thought that on the TV on Saturday night.
Well, I felt we were shell-shocked from the start. Right. And this does happen in Paris, you know. The noise is amazing. It's an incredible stadium. I mean, the noise is fantastic. It's a different type of atmosphere than we have over here. Even when we're very loud here, it isn't as noisy and as kind of carnival-like as it is in France. The energy from the anthems looked impressive. Sounded fantastic, and they started with proper intent. Now, you're going to say every team starts with intent, but every pass sticks in the perfect place for them, and that puts you under huge pressure. They're offloading. Every single offload puts a defensive setup under pressure. Every quick ruck puts a defensive setup under pressure. And you have France play differently. So there's huge depth in their backs. So they come from deep and they come very late at different times. They hit the ball flat. All they have to do is break one hand and look for an offload. And they started perfectly. And if we didn't have that Hansen piece of brilliance, we could have been in trouble.
Yeah.
So was there anxiety? You're dead right, there's anxiety. Mm. Because when they're in that full flow, it's a scary, scary place to be. And I, it's funny, I still look at how they held on to it. The pressure that they were getting was absolutely intense. So they were going over the gain line against Wales the previous week. And the game is easy, and it's easier for your 10 in particular. If he's running onto a ball, he can see things far clearer and he can see the gaps that are there. Ireland were a couple of times they took short runners in, which you do have to do. And I don't think we did too much of it, but we did them, but we got knocked back. And because we were knocked back, we went kicking. And I thought Jemison Gibson-Park was under an awful lot of pressure at getting the ball out, of having to pass over legs and over bodies.
Yeah.
I think he was shell-shocked with the intent that was against him. And he's played lots of big games, but I don't think any at that tempo. So I think he struggled a little bit. And I thought Connor struggled when he came on too, because at that stage, you really need us to be flying. And he was getting knocked back. And what does he do when it's knocked back? He slows it down and goes to box kick and whatever. And that's not necessarily what was needed at that stage. So, look, I still go back to the idea that the pressure they were under was unbelievable for 80 minutes.
Yeah.
I thought they rode it incredibly well. I thought they got back into the game incredibly well. And therefore, certain elements of luck and different things and ball sticking but we got pressurized into penalties, and this Irish team isn't used to giving away penalties either, so they rarely give their opposition an opportunity to hit over, you know, for their out or their fullback to hit 20 points or score 20 points. That's a lot of points. We rarely give that opportunity, and that's something we look at.
Yeah, and I guess, look, the optimistic view is you don't give away a try in the first 2 minutes. Don't turn your backs. Be aware of a quick line out, and then 3-2. So they really did, France, kick their way to victory in this game. So, you know, lots of crumbs of optimism there for sure. So the way you've both set this up is very interesting from an Irish point of view, say, with a view to the World Cup. Because, Liam, this ferocious size, which, you know, rugby is still a simple game, this is going to cause Ireland problems. And you're saying it's South Africa, it's this French team. Keith, you said it's England to a point. It depends maybe what personnel they have in, but very few teams. So Ireland, actually almost akin to Leinster breezing through Europe and then meeting a big team, Ireland won't be tested in this way all that often in the build-up to the World Cup. And there'll be that degree of wondering, well, how are we going to handle it today? And not having too many opportunities to perfect how they might combat that. That leaves Andy Farrell and Paul O'Connell and the whole ticket in a very interesting place. They might get 2, 3, 4 more goes before it's really showtime.
Well, if you think of the jump from... I think that the moment in time for me was when Ireland played Japan in the Autumn Series. You saw a variety in the attack, a precision in the attack, forwards passing, front rows passing, but back rows especially getting involved in offloading and passing, a whole new intricate. So we have seen that's a massive step forward. Okay, what we learned at the weekend is, and of course the Six Nations is such a unique tournament because now we play Italy and sure, they're a totally different challenge. And then Scotland at the very end are a totally different challenge as well. So that's the challenge of this competition. It presents us these wonderful different games that require a different set of tactics, essentially. So I suppose...
But it is the size that is the scariest of all of them, and always has been.
But what we've seen Andy Farrell and Mike Cadd and the team evolve into, and obviously O'Connell coming in the set piece, but we've seen that the team move the point of attack. Defensively, it is much more difficult now to judge where the Irish attack is going than it ever was. Mm. The skill sets and the expectation of the forwards is much higher. Like you've seen Tyburn. We discussed last week, I thought that there's a huge validity to thinking of if you'd got Ian Henderson, a fit Ian Henderson going into that game, and you were saying, well, what would you drop Tyburn? I said, well, I don't think that's the way I'd term it.
Yeah.
But you need at times to match up where you possibly can and not shift away from the core team ethics. And what's happening is that the players now, there's an expectation. If you get picked for Ireland and you're a back row player or a front row player, you're going to be expected to do an awful lot more than what you thought you were going to be doing. And that's a good thing. So how can the next step for me, or the next challenge, is when you face those two or three sides in world rugby that have, like France again, you've got to give them credit, another top test and they're over 90% tackle success. Like what they're achieving consistently is really impressive. And Ireland to be able to live in that environment away from home, we discussed that as well last week, was a real challenge. And they answered most of them in a positive sense, and there's huge learnings in that way. So it is trying to figure out that balance. How can we stay consistent and true to what we're trying to achieve, but be conscious of the opposition we're playing next Saturday, the following Saturday, yeah, are going to present hugely more difficult challenges. And then you look at Carberry. Like, Carberry would not have got that amount of high-end. Like, he came on and kicked a goal on his 21st birthday to beat, you know, to beat the All Blacks in Chicago. That was kind of silky stuff. This was an entire... This is welcome to the big time. Like, yeah. This was an entirely different experience. And he, the quality player he is, he will springboard from that as well. And I think I'm really, really excited about what this management and these players will strive to achieve over the... And the timing of this loss under these circumstances couldn't be more perfect, because there is time to tweak and tinker around the edges to try and answer that question. How do you play 80 minutes against that level of power when the opposition are focused as France were?
Yeah, it was interesting. I was thinking, Liam, because Rob Kearney, we were chatting, and he reckoned some of the thinking on Henderson on the bench was when, you know, the horrible moment happens that you have to take off Tadhg Furlong, for instance. Well, Henderson then pushing in the scrum fresh is a help, you know, and all these considerations are going on that, you know, probably the layman like me isn't considering. So, Keith, I guess a kind of final word. It's rare we've been so optimistic listening to you two after a defeat.
Yeah, it's funny. I still watch the game. I didn't really watch it as a fan. I kind of went back to the analytical way of looking at the game, and I thought it was an amazing game of rugby. Mm. And I thought from an Irish coach's perspective, they'll have learned an awful lot from the team. I think from the French as well, they'll have learned an awful lot from what happened and how their players reacted, and also how their players panicked a little in the second half. So that was kind of interesting. I think this is very important for the World Cup, but equally, well, I think I said at the very start of the Six Nations, I didn't see there being a Grand Slam. And the challenge for France is that the big game for them, and I spoke to a couple of French reporters last week, this is the only game they were thinking about. And they can get up for those big games. It's can they get up for... you know, like Scotland beat them last year.
Yeah, they get Murrayfield next, yeah.
Yeah, can they get up for those games if they don't regard their opposition at the same level? So that's an interesting quandary for them. So, and equally well, I would be looking at Ireland saying, who are we playing next? What are we going to do about that? How are we going to get the most out of it? I'd like to see Joey Carberry start again, the next one. And I think we can, I think he deserves it. I thought he played really, really well.
Is there any argument you say you're starting in Twickenham too?
There is an argument for it, but I don't mind when we get to Twickenham. I think what you want to do is give Joey an opportunity to back up what he did at the weekend. And I have to say, I thought his performance, I'd have kept him on, even though he was probably falling apart by the time they took him off. I'd have kept him on because I don't like the idea of changing your out half too often. So, but he has played no rugby and he played at that level. So I think I'd like to see him play again with a couple of weeks, get him in to manage a team not under quite as much pressure and to see that you could do very well there. Now, it will be huge pressure, but it's a different type. But I think Ireland still have a chance of winning this championship. So I would be keeping that in my head just as much as I would growth for the future. But so I wouldn't be looking for wholesale changes for the game. I think you need to pick your team, actually, that goes and wins as many matches as you can. So, and it's the players that have to force their way in. So for me, Joey was given an opportunity because of injury. He took it really well. Let's see him back it up.
Okay, lads, really good chat. I know you were moving your schedules around as well to help us out today, so much appreciated. Liam Toland, Keith Wood, thanks fellas, appreciate it.
Cheers, gents.
Cheers. Rugby on Off the Ball as well is with thanks to Vodafone, main sponsor of the Irish rugby team. We all belong to the team of us. We'll have Brian O'Driscoll in studio tomorrow as well.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball
with Vodafone, main sponsor of the Irish rugby team. We all belong to the team of us.